Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cultural Conversations with me, your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. Join us as we bring weekly cultural topics right here to our studio. You, as our studio audience, are welcome to chime in and call the studio or join us on chat. Because, you know, at Cultural Conversations, we believe that cultural issues really do shape and impact our world. So, join us as we discuss the hottest topics and the cultural issues of our day. Stay tuned.
Well, welcome to another segment of Cultural Conversations with me, your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. Tonight's topic, we continue from last week in our part two segment of Police Killing Black Men in America, Who Can Stop the Madness? This is a topic that is near and dear to, it should be all of community, whether black, white, yellow, red, whatever your ethnicity or background. What we are seeing here is a rash of police violence and misuse of community involvement and engagement in community policing. And we want to try to find answers to what's actually going on in our community, the things that we're seeing coming across on social media in reference to police engagement and police handling of the community that they're supposed to be hired to protect and serve. And also, tonight, we're going to look at what does it mean to protect and serve. We're going to also look at some historical patterns of police involvement and some historical trauma. Our tonight's guest, he specifically deals with the trauma of African Americans here in America and, of course, the regulation or regulating of our communities, our neighborhoods, and oftentimes even our household could have a traumatic effect on black men in general. So we want to hear from the expert. If you would like to call into Cultural Conversations tonight, our studio line, our online studio line is open tonight. You can call in the number at 347-857-3121. And we'll try to get you on. I see some people in the chat room. The chat room is also open at Cultural Conversations here on Blog Talk Radio. But this is a very important topic as we look at reform for our law enforcement agencies, and also as we look at reforms in how we do community policing and how those who are hired to serve and protect are engaging with our community. We need to look at that. As you are quite aware now, for the last, last 6 months, we've been seeing, longer than 6 months. I noticed that it started off around the Trayvon Martin shooting, that from that time, we've gotten many, many videos of police engagement with the community published on social media. It's becoming almost an everyday occurrence where we'll see different videos and different people who've actually lost their lives on video and to no explanation of why there's this overt display of power and aggression as it comes to serving and engaging with the community. One of the things that we notice is that there's an over-aggression when it comes to the Black community, and it's a heightened overaggression when it comes to engagement with African American men. Our topic tonight, police killing Black men in America and who can stop the madness, and this is a part two of a two-part series. Tonight we have as our special guest Sam Simmons. I've been in contact with Sam before and referenced the cultural issues, especially as it pertains to Black men in the community and the role of Black men. Sam Simmons is licensed as an alcohol and drug counselor who has over 25 years' experience as a behavioral consultant in the areas of chemical dependency, violence abatement, and historical trauma. He specializes in practical, culturally sensitive trauma, informed work with African American males and their families. Sam Simmons is founder of the Black Men Healing Conference, and he is president and CEO of Sam Simmons Consulting. So what I've asked Sam to do tonight, his perspective about what's going on with this these outbreaks of police shootings and police violence that have resulted in Black men losing their lives, right, on video, in front of our faces, every day in social media. But not only talk about it and, you know, gripe about it and bitch about it, but as we do here on Cultural Conversations, we try to find solutions. What are some suggestions for possible solutions, and how can we turn the situation around? And so tonight, I'm going to welcome Sam Simmons to our studio. If you would like, again, if you would like to call into the show, Sam would be available to answer any questions or engage in a conversation. This space is also for healing. This space is also getting things off your chest here at Cultural Conversations. And so we welcome your input. Please call the show at 347-857-3121, and you're listening to Cultural Conversations with me, your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. Again, I want to welcome Sam Simmons to the show. Sam, you are on live with Cultural Conversation. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. You know, listening to the introduction, I sound really, really important. And, you know, so I hope I can live up to the introduction.
You are important to us at this time, as we're trying to, as the community is reaching out to try to understand what exactly is going on, you know, in the community, as so far as what we're seeing these rash outbreaks of, you know, police, I'm going to just say it, police brutality. So we need someone to come and say, you know, this is what they're seeing. And so you are important to the game right now.
Well, you know, the thing is, it's, I think, the biggest piece about all this is the video. I mean, you know, I'm you know, over 60 years old, and I grew up in a city, in a town that was similar to Ferguson, and that town is still you know, where the police authorities or the authorities in general don't really give Black people or people of color, especially, and poor people, much respect to this day. And, you know, the whole situation of being, especially in the town I grew up in the Quad Cities, where all the factories are gone and those kind of things, where people, you know, don't have a lot working for them in certain parts of the community. So I think the big piece is not that this kind of behavior hadn't been going on before now. It's just we have video, we have proof that even with the proof, we can see that folks still trying to deny what's happening in terms of lives of Black men. I think the thing that really, really scared people even more and really brought it to their attention is this whole Trayvon Martin piece, where you don't have to even be a police officer. You can just want to be a police officer and take somebody's life and basically get away with it. And how black men, even from the beginning, especially us who have slavery in the past, even from the beginning, we were always set up and framed in a way to be terrified of or scared of, even though we didn't have the power. And even, you know, when I talk about historical trauma, I talk a great deal about after slavery, how basically black men have not been of much worth to America if unless they were making some type of money or funds off of black men. I mean, if you've got all these black individuals who were free labor and now all of a sudden they're free, what do you do with them when you already done a great job of demonizing them and framing them as less than human? You're not going to automatically change that overnight. And so we continue to see this repeating of the history of the discounting of black men, the fear of black men, the fear of black men's sexuality. I mean, when we talk about how when they interview the police officers who claim to be in fear of their lives, they always they have a tendency to talk about black men as these big monsters. And so when we talk about what else is going on, you also have the issue of individuals, young men in a lot of cases, police officers. Then you have the other ones who are not so young, who just never had no respect for black folks and or people in general, who just gets off on the power trip. But if you got young men who are already scared of a group of men and have no relationship with them and get the little adrenaline rush and got access to firearms and quick the judgment of a group of people that they're scared of, it's a bad mix. Very bad mix.
Mm-hmm. I wanna go back to something that you said, Sam, and I know, you know, last week we dealt with the current situation and kind of took the topic from what we are seeing in Ferguson, what we see in Tulsa, what we see now. Just when I came home, looking at the news, there was another incident in Baltimore that happened over the weekend, where a young black man was murdered. Well, I don't want to say murdered because it's not alleged that something happened. You end up walking into a police van and then you end up being carried out. There's something wrong there. But you talked about the historical aspect, and we didn't get into that last week, but how was our communities formed as it pertains to black men who are, I'm a black female, and so who are, there are roles, there are clear defined roles, I don't care what anybody said. I'm from the deep south, there's a role that males play, there's a role that female plays. And oftentimes, sometimes we cross those roles depending on our family dynamics and if the male was available. If the male wasn't available, then the female did her role and she did an extra role in compensating for the loss of the male. But what was it like to be released from slavery, finished with slavery, then you're in your own community? We still have those communities in existence today, and then have a regulating body, a governance body, that will come in and regulate or issue the law. And that's what I'm starting to see. I know there was a historical reason for that, but, you know, and then Jim Crow and then lynching never ended, really. But what is that historically that now we're starting to see in our communities and neighborhoods, the police force that doesn't look like us? How did that happen? How did that come?
Well, I mean, having a police force that doesn't look like us, I mean, here in Minnesota, we know how that happened. I mean, we're outnumbered here. But the other piece is over the last, 20 years or so, we have so many of black men being locked up around that whole drug war. So you have, and then on top of that, the relationship of our relationship with the police force and that kind of stuff, not having individuals that look like us join the police force. So there's many different pieces, but, you know, you got folks, and, yeah, many different pieces, and folks who really look forward to being in those roles to feed their need to have power, and really see and probably initially see the role as a way to serve and protect, and at the same time, emotionally, in some cases, not much different than what, you know, the system or the way the community proclaims about young black males seeking power and control when they feel like they have none. When you get, you know, two mentalities that are similar and one has a gun legally and the other one doesn't, and you add the piece of not being, you know, that your masculinity is tied in not being afraid, it's the same thing when we see the gun violence in general. If you're an afraid individual, especially as a man, and you got a gun, the gun is the equalizer. And if you got fear behind the gun, I'm gonna use the equalizer quicker than I'm going to speak to somebody. And if you got a way of demonizing a group of people where you have diminished the importance of their life, and even with the, you know, and then at the same time, you know, good or bad, and some people might say, well, you know, it's propaganda and that kind of stuff. Also seeing the people themselves, the way things are portrayed in the media and some of in the reality in some cases, that the people themselves don't respect their lives or their black males' lives. Over time, it gets to a piece of just easy not to respect and go on about your business. And see that individual again. It's about how you see an individual. How you see an individual is how you treat that individual. And if I see that individual as less than, I treat that person as less than. And we have to understand that when we're talking about police brutality, it's in terms of the policeman, it's not always about the policeman being white. There's a mentality and an attitude about the community that goes along with that uniform.
Yeah. That was mentioned also, that it's not about black, it's not about white, it's about being blue. You know, being blue.
Yeah, it's about being blue. It's about power and control. It's about taking on the leadership's attitude about a group of people. I mean, if we look at Ferguson and what was going on in Ferguson, in terms of the tickets and that kind of stuff, it goes on to some degree here as well. I mean, if you know, I always talk to young people about, you know, you come up with a law, you know, and sometimes we believe laws are set specifically to disenfranchise poor and people of color. But what if you make a law and you police it differently? So if you have a large concentration of police who are not in a mode of compassion, okay, and you give a mandate that you have to have a certain amount of tickets, it's almost like being predators. If you look at animal kingdoms, you'll see that the predator waits for the weakest link to go after because they don't want to work that hard. So there's some of these tactics that they do in communities of color and poor communities that would be much more difficult to do in communities that more well-off communities, communities that know their rights, and communities that might have money. But also, it's also easier to mistreat somebody who don't look like you. And mm-hmm. and having folks come outside of the community, inside the community, without the proper training or the proper understanding. And again, even with the proper training and understanding, if the leadership is promoting behind the scenes this abuse, then and then they want to throw their hands up like they don't know. A lot of times, this comes straight from the top. Even if it's not said, it's about the attitude of, you know, turning. If you don't have to say things, if your attitude about how somebody treating somebody and all you do is turn your head, that's the same thing as condoning it.
Right, right. I often think back, and thank you for kind of explaining, kind of bringing us from a historical pattern of, you know, our communities were regulated and guarded and designed to be regulated by these external forces. And now what we've seen is the attitudes, you know, it could be, these attitudes could have been and probably was something that was intrinsic and for hundreds of years, the dehumanization. And just like you said, if a black man wasn't making any money or wasn't, you know, contributing to that free labor, to that slave labor that this country was in other countries as well, not only this country, other countries
right.
were so comfortable with, that once that was over and it hadn't had any impact anymore economically, we were still treated and dehumanized. And some of that stuff carries on into the way that law enforcement treats and acts within our community as well. Why do people fear black men so much? I mean, you work exclusively with black men. I always ask that question. I ask that question of you when Trayvon Martin was shot. And I want to know, why do you fear black men? Why?
Oh, God.
I want to know that. And I remember distinctly asking you that question. If I go back to that tape, I want to know. I have two. I raised two black men. They're men
right.
now.
Right.
And I still look at them like little boys, but they're men. But why do people fear them?
Well, I mean, the part of that is I believe from the beginning, it's just that in spite of whatever you do, part of it is in terms of America, it was imperative for folks to set up a situation of having people, even good-natured people, be afraid of black men. But the other piece is, I think sometimes especially when I talk to some of my white colleagues who get honest, every now and then you can get them to be honest, you know, behind the doors, is if you think about white individuals, how they look for revenge and get scared easily when things are not in their control, I think that sometimes, especially with what's going on here, is the fear. They've always been afraid that we were going to uprise and actually try to take them over. There's always been that piece. I mean, think about it. An example of that is when Obama, when they realized that Obama was going to win the presidency within the next 30 days, gun sales went up several hundred percent.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, they ran out of bullets for a while. Okay? So it's like, why are you so afraid? Right, when majority of folks who are gun owners own 3 to 5 or more guns apiece, so they probably own more guns than we do in our community. But it's always been this fear that, you know, because even if we who think that sometimes that whites are heartless or whatever, in their soul, the fear is when these folks ever decide, if they ever decide to be like as brutal as we are, we in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
We are in trouble. And then, you know, the size, the fact that here that you, no matter how brutal you are to black men and black people, they still are here. And again, some of that is that fear of how vibrant and how well we adapt to mistreatment and that kind of thing, really, I think scares them. But the other piece is, especially over time, is this whole thing of white supremacy has always went out of its way to put black men in a position to be scary. You know, the whole thing, if they're going to take our white women, they're going to rape them, and you know, you got to watch them and that kind of stuff. And so there's been some systematic piece, and there's this internal piece of when are they going to turn on us? If they get power, will they do us as bad as we have done them? Again, that picture is so vivid. I remember they did a documentary on HBO, and they interviewed white men down south who literally were in tears with the idea that we had a black president. That's so ingrained. That fear is so ingrained that it's almost toxic. I mean, you know, I can walk into a room of folks who actually say they you know, trust me and like me, and walk in the room and still scare them. And they know me. I remember there was a conversation with a friend of mine who went to a meeting, and he says, you know, Sam, I had a meeting today, and your name came up, and some of the women, and they were white women, were saying that, talking about the first time they met you, how scared they was. And they started laughing. I said, "What is so funny?" I said, "I wonder what they were scared of. Were they scared that I was going to jump across the table and rape them, or whatever?" So over the years, as black men, we have had this extra burden that embitters us, that we have to, in a lot of cases, feel. And I think this young generation refused to do that to another whole another level. To make whites feel comfortable. My father was 310 pounds, one of the most gentle men that you could know, except when he was drinking. And when he was drinking, he was trying to drown his misery and his trauma and his sadness. My father would literally walk in a room and try to make himself look smaller so people be more accepting of him, which never really worked. Because he just wanted people to like him and accept him. And you know me. You done been around me. I refuse to do that. Because I've seen how that just ate him from the inside out. You know, I wear dark glasses most of the time. That's because light messes with my eyes. Folks think I'm trying to be cool. It does come in handy because then, you know, you can't see my eyes. I can watch how people are watching me. But, and again, that has cost me, I believe, has cost me some positions, have cost me some money. But I'm okay with that because I've made that decision. So.
Of course, I think what you're seeing, what you have described, you know, when I saw the movie The Butler and then the 12 Years a Slave, it struck, you know, a nerve because of for many many reasons, but to have people fear you, assume, make assumptions about you just based on your color, based on your gender, as we have different professions. it is prevalent that kind of attitude and fear, it still exists. Whether we're hanging on the corner, whether it's the brother that's hanging on the corner, and he might be sagging, but, you know, he's not, you know, he's trying to put up this cool pose. We don't know why. I don't know why he's doing it, but he wants to be seen. There's something there. He wants to be seen. He's feared. Brother or sister that's working in the office, when you go into a boardroom, I've had this experience. I go into a boardroom and the whole room just shut up. And
right.
it's a different atmosphere. Or having one of your colleagues said, "Oh, you come in to get us all straightened out." Well, I come in to do my job, and I come in into work. You know, I don't come in like I'm Madea and I'm trying to, you know, get everybody told off or whatever. I come to be a team player and to make strides and do the best that I can do. But there are those kind of assumptions, you know, that's put on us as black men and black women. And unfortunately, as we look at our engagement with police officer, our police officer engagement in the community, it is based in fear. Have you seen some of the videos, Sam? And give us an assessment. As you've seen some of this video footage, the one guy, he reaches for what he thinks is his taser, but it's actually his gun. And the attitudes and the smirk remarks after he shoots a man to death. You know, what is that?
Well, the thing is, it just shows you how normal it is for them to do that. I mean, think about the situation in Charleston. North Charleston. I got family in North Charleston, okay? I'm originally from South Carolina. I knew as almost could had an idea exactly where that was when the man got shot in the back. Those attitudes were so spontaneous. Them were regular attitudes. Until we were able to get them on video, that's the issue is that's just letting you know how normalized it is to look at and diminish the life of a black person, and in these cases, a black man, and so that's just what it is. And I know it's painful to believe that, you know, to see that, but that's just for somebody to talk like that. That's just normal. And in a lot of these cases, you've noticed that they will put handcuffs on dead people. And or people who done been shot and wait around, and you don't hear nobody say anything about getting an ambulance. It's just another dead man, okay?
Yes.
Another dead black man. And you know, and then so the thing is how do we get to a point where black life matter, and I'm talking about all black life matters, all life matters, and not just when a police officer kills this individual. Because, you know, you talk about being afraid of black men, but at the same time, the catch-22 for us is always to try to respond to negative stuff, and sometimes our response to negative stuff is negative. I was taught when I was a little kid, when we used to deal with social workers and that kind of stuff, if you scare a social worker, you'll get what you want. Okay? And so now we got this posturing of fear, because even with two black men, we will refuse to smile at each other.
No.
And then when we talk about the younger ones, then, you know, they have to, you know, they posture with each other to see to see who's going to make what move. I can be in a room with a bunch of young black men and be looking in the direction. I had that happen today. I was just looking in the direction where the young man was sitting, and he know me, and he said, "Well, why you keep looking at me?" "Well, I'm not really looking at you." "Well, every time I look up, you're looking this way." Right? And so the thing is it's almost a both and. It's almost a catch-22. Is so for me to survive in parts of our community, I got to be able to look stronger than you or look more tougher than you, so that before we can even have a conversation. And a lot of that has to do with trauma. A lot of that has to do with trauma that as a process of the 346 years of our, especially us who have slavery in the past, our existence here in America, and this that's just the systematic trauma, conditioning, but then the trauma that we experience dealing with each other and not having a process to deal with that trauma. We'll talk about how the systems have mistreated us, but we don't have a lot of healthy ways to talk about the trauma we experience with each other, like the trauma we experience with sometimes our fathers who love us but don't know how to show they love us. I was raised with my father in the house. I've listened to some of my guys who weren't raised with their fathers, and mm-hmm. I listen to, and I end up realizing that I have some of the same trauma that some of them have who didn't know their father, and I knew my father, but we did not have an emotional connection. And in my history of trauma in my family, my father didn't have an emotional connection with my grandfather, who was equivalent to Mr. in Color Purple. And there was a lot of old black men like that who were just so bitter and so hurt mm-hmm. that they just didn't know what to do with all the anger and angst that they had inside of them that would flow out when they would have that drink that black women knew was there and unfortunately mm-hmm. felt obligated to tolerate that to try to hold the family together. And so the thing is again, it ends up in a catch 22 because we'll talk. Sometimes it's easier to talk about what somebody else is doing to you, and not as easy to talk about what I might be doing to myself. And the ironic part is the thing that I really have more control over is what I can do with myself. But it's so painful to take a look at that and take a look at the community. And how indirectly, right or wrongly, and people might disagree with this, but right or wrongly, actually feeds those negative attitudes that other people have of us.
Right. Sam, one moment. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back. And when we come back, I want you to get your head wrapped around, again, talking about trauma, talking about the trauma, because if we don't get over this trauma, in our own communities, and then we're dictating to others how we want them to engage with us, but we're still
right.
suffering, trauma. And guess what? That external party, they're still suffering trauma as well. So we're going to come back, give us a moment, and we're going to come back. If you would like to call the show tonight, you're welcome to call the show at 347-857-3121. We have an engaging conversation on this police killing black men in America, who can stop the madness, and this is a part two, and we're learning a lot about the historical aspects of it from our guest tonight, Sam Simmons, and he is a counselor. He's a psychologist, and a counselor as an alcohol and drug counselor who has over 5 years experience as a behavior consultant in the areas of chemical dependency, violence, abatement, and historical trauma. So tonight, that's what we're getting into. We're talking about that historical trauma, but also we're looking at some of the police engagement and what's going on in our communities and why we're seeing this large rash of videos that are displaying police violence. And what Sam has clarified to us in the first segment is that this is nothing new. Now, this has been happening in our communities hundreds of years. It's the policing of our communities post-slavery and engagement of our communities, even through the drug war, even through now with the mass incarceration of black and brown individuals, as we look at the money and the income of the private prison industry. All of this is tied into, and then to capitalize on all of that is just the grand fear of black men. So we're looking at that tonight, and we're having a cultural conversation with Sam Simmons. Happy to have Sam Simmons on as a guest. And if you would like to call into the show, please do at 347-857-3121. And one of the things that we're going to talk about in the second half after we come back from just the break is the Black Men Healing Conference. So after we talk about all these issues that are going on in our community, how do we heal? How do we get that information and knowledge that we need to know? And so Sam Timmons is going to abreast and give us some information about that as well. We'll be right back in just one moment. Well, thank you for joining Cultural Conversations tonight. Our tonight's topic is really approaching the subject of what's going on with all of the police engagement and things that we're seeing on video, Black men getting shot down, like almost like animals, really, as we look at this, at these different incidents that are taking place. And we're trying to find some answers, but also we're looking at some solutions on both sides. Do we need to revisit community policing? What do we need to heal from the trauma of not only engagement with law enforcement, but a trauma that we suffered here in this country? I have Sam Simmons on the line tonight as a special guest here at Cultural Conversation. Sam, you did a very special conference each year. Could you tell us a little bit about the conference and what's the premise of the conference and why is it important?
Well, the conference is called Community Empowerment Through Black Man Healing, and the reason that we named it that is because when we have conversations about the ills and disparities in the African-American community, you know, such as violence and drugs, poverty, and, you know, and often that's discussed, and also we talk about systems, you know, the concerns about how the systems are treated, oppression, and those other barriers, the one thing that doesn't get talked about is the trauma. Especially when, you know, the system talk about what's wrong with the black community, what comes in the forefront is conversations about what black men are not doing, and always and talking about accountability and them not being accountable. But again, what doesn't get talked about is black men suffering. And so we decided that if we're going to talk about community trauma, we should start with black men. And what we see in America, well, probably even around the world, is that man trauma in general is not dealt with. So hurt people hurt people. But when we're talking about black male trauma and not having it dealt with, what happens is it directly and even indirectly affects the women and children and the community, and the cycle continues. Give you a quick example is that when I ask young men, when did you realize you was a man, especially my young guys who've been dealing with the criminal justice system, almost every last one of them talk about their rite of passage is involving some type of trauma, and usually some type of community trauma or family trauma in their lives, and how they hold on to that trauma, and how does it come out when they're under a lot of stress. So with that in mind, me and another gentleman in 2008 decided that we wanted to focus on black male trauma as a way to start trying to address some of these issues in our community. That does not take away from the work everybody's doing to deal with systems and oppression directly. But we just felt that the one thing that was missing from the conversation is the issue of black male trauma, but most importantly, African American community trauma. So in 2009,
we can't talk about that enough. If 50 people, 50 organizations are talking about it, then 51 join right in. You know,
right.
We have a caller on the line, Sam. So I want to get this caller in, and so that she can ask a question. Caller, you are on the line with Cultural Conversations.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
Hello. Go ahead.
How are you guys doing this evening?
Just fine.
Okay, great. Well, I want to get right into it and get out of the way. I have a question, and it's more in the line of a solution. And I first want to put this disclaimer out here. I want you all to know that I'm coming from a place of sincerity and love, and this is strictly didactic for me. I was doing some research on a whole different subjects. And I subscribe to some very expensive, high-end advertising periodicals. And I've been tracking who the major corporations spend their money to advertise to. And I'm noticing that they're giving a 20-year perspective or outlook on who they plan to spend the most money advertising to. And I'm going somewhere with this. Now, they're saying that the black man with the white woman and non-black woman, they're going to do major advertising campaigns to them. So I'm thinking, would we be far-fetched to reach out to the black man and the non-black woman and the white woman and ask them what do they consider doing about the dilemma that we are having in the black community with these white police officers killing black men? Would it be divisive or taken wrong, sir, for us to put that on the table? Because I do believe that the white woman would be able to reach, I mean, her presence would change something, being that we are seeing that relationship is very fluent in our community nowadays.
Okay.
Thank you for that. For that posing that, Sam, you know, I could answer. As
no,
well.
That's provocative. It's an interesting provocative question, and in my let's see, how do I answer that? My answer to that is The fact that they want to advertise to black men and want to focus on black men and white women, I find that interesting. But the other piece is the issue comes down to is at times white women have not have only been allies at their convenience.
And so
I've had situations where I've had clients who were even married to white women who did not care for black people. So I'm not sure. I mean, we have a lot of allies who are white women and white men, but at times when they don't understand the dilemma, you know, until there was video, even people who we have friendships with sometimes thought we were overreacting at the experiences we were having with the police departments. And so the piece is how do you get a person, even if they are having relationships with black men or black men with them or whatever, they still have to get out their own way when it comes to dealing with personal, more global issues around, you know, in terms of this police brutality. The issue with the police brutality, again, is very systematic. And I think that one point is that is true, that the more we get folks who don't look like us to understand the systematic pieces behind this, but also look at how the average person's ignorance and refusal to deal with one of the most horrific situations in America, the issue of slavery, and how how people benefit from that. Just the idea of not having to think about being mistreated by a police officer and how freeing that would be. That looking at that privilege, are they willing to give up some of that privilege to make it fairer for other people? So it becomes a very complicated question.
It is complicated, and I'm surprised that, you know, they have that the marketers and you know, I don't know what particular research or marketing study that was had for her question or her solution, but it's surprising. I've done research on African American female empowerment and leadership, and it was very difficult to find information on African American males' leadership. Actually, some studies, some of the main studies that I used, they labeled African American males as NC, not considered. You know, statistical terms, NC mean not considered. So, so they didn't even have research on how African Americans males rule, how they lead corporations, how they lead in their community, how they lead in their homes. This is just very interesting. The dynamic of white women, I think, you know, from Sam, from what you said, and you know, the history is that not oftentimes can we find a pure, direct, consistent dependency on their allegiance or loyalty as it comes to civic engagement and justice, social justice issues. We've had that problem when we called it feminism. Do black women want to be feminists? So of course we're feminists, but we're feminists in a different way than they're feminists. You know, we can't lock arm in arm because they may just pull out again, you know, on us again, white women. And so I'm being sincere and real based on historical patterns, based on research. You know,
well,
it would be interesting to know which research study that is.
I
want to get to your conference and in some of the topics and subjects that will be covered in your conference. I'm sorry, I cut you off this round.
Well, there's a couple, you know, I'm going to get to the conference, but the other issue is sometimes that whole black male and white female conversation ends up being a smokescreen in terms of us dealing with some of that's almost a result of some of the trauma that we experience every day in terms of trying to relate with each other. But in terms of the conference this year, what's interesting is our topic this year is gender issues in the African-American community. And every when I mentioned that, when I told folks that I want to tackle that, folks would say, ooh, good luck, brother. You know, and I think it kind of really kind of responds to the question, because you know when she asked about the who are they marketing to, I wouldn't doubt that might be true. But the other piece is the idea that they market to us because we spend more money than we save. So that's true as well. But our conference this year should be very enlightening, I hope. And a couple of our speakers that we have is Dr. Patricia McManus. She is the co-founder and president and CEO of the Black Health Coalition of Wisconsin. And she will come here and talk about the work she's done in terms of health, in terms of our community. Very insightful, and we'll definitely have some things to think about on how a community can work towards improving health outcomes, addressing things like domestic violence and those things in our community, and again, in those things around gender. Also, we have coming in, we have Cleo Minago, who will be here. If you watch TV1, he's a commentator who's often on TV1, and he will be addressing issues around masculinity, homophobia, and has done a lot of work around male trauma. And when I reached out to him and said what we were talking about, historical trauma and gender issues in the Black community, he jumped at the chance to come. So this should be actually a fun conference. We've been fortunate enough that over the last 7 years that the conference has been highly rated, and actually we will have several people from out of the state. Some from Wisconsin. I think we're going to have some from Portland. I think we might have some from Memphis. We might have some folks from Washington, D.C. that are coming in specifically for this conference.
It's going to be awesome. I presented once at the conference, and I'm telling you, it was just awesome to see and awesome to hear people talk about it and then hear the buzz on social media and even, you know, now at the state, talking about there's a Black Men Healing Conference here in St. Paul. And this is at the state capitol that they're saying there's a Black Men Healing Conference in St. Paul. And I was like, wait, that's my friend Sam Simmons' conference. Yeah, it's at Metro State. And these people who were talking about it, they weren't Black.
I know. And the thing is it's imperative to be able to articulate what is going on and how people indirectly or directly are contributing to it, and doing it in a way where you don't shame people. Even though you write, if you shame people, they will shut down and they won't work as well a lot of times with you as they would is if you can get real hard information out, but you don't always have to shame people to do it.
Sam, is there anything that's addressing as we come to, you know, a close of our time and our hour here? Is there anything that we can do as a community to one support? Of course, we're going to support the Black Men Healing Conference. Could you give us when are the dates and how do we register for it and who do we contact? Could you give us information about that?
Well, the date is June 25th and 26th. It'll be a full day on the 25th, which is Thursday, and a half a day on the 26th. You can go to healingbrothers.com to register. Registration was opened yesterday. And is at Metro State University in St. Paul campus. And, healingbrothers.com will get you all the information. Or you can go to SamuelSimmonsConsulting.com. Either one of them will actually, and brothershealing.com, any of those will get you to the conference. And just click on conference, and you'll get all the information you need. That's June 25th and 26th at Metro State University, 2015.
Yes, St. Paul, Minnesota, we're in the house. And what do we say in reference to, and I know this is probably a bigger conversation, and I hope that you have a venue there to discuss it, you know, at the conference. But what messages should we be telling our beautiful sons, our beautiful men, in reference to, hey, this is a crazy world out here. We have to protect ourselves. What messages do we give not only our internal community, but those who are supposed to be protecting and serving us?
Well, I think in terms of the people who are protecting and supposed to be protecting and serving us, really challenge them to revise training, really challenge them to really look at their ability to have compassion for other folks, no matter what color it is. But we need to challenge our folks in power to really take a look at what's going on. Because again, if the top is turning a blind eye to this, all they're doing is saying it's awful, but turning a blind eye to it, ain't nothing changing. In terms of brothers in the community, we have to start working at ways to support each other, and the best way to support each other is be able to be honest about our trauma. Because one of the things I've learned, if we help people move the trauma out the way, everything else works better.
Okay. Well, Sam Simmons, I want to thank you for joining me tonight. It has been awesome, and you've given us not only a lot of information about what's going on right now, but making us understand the historical patterns, and that, yes, there's trauma that people have suffered and that people are working through, and we as a community have to support our men as they're working through those trauma in really addressing their trauma. So I want to thank you for joining me tonight, and I will support you any way that I can here at Culture Conversations for the conference and beyond. Okay?
Well, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you for joining me here at Culture Conversations tonight. It has been wonderful to get community members such as Sam Simmons. Again, Sam is he's the coordinator, developer, creator of the Black Men Healing Conference. That conference will take place here in June. If you want to have more information about the conference, he's even on Facebook, and he has a link to the conference there on Facebook, Black Men Healing Conference. And it's just been awesome to have Sam here talking about the Black Men Healing Conference, but also talking about the trauma that Black men have had in this historical life here in the Americas. So I am I'm excited that he has joined us and tried to give clarity, or giving clarity around the current things that we're seeing with engagement of police in our community, but also some issues that we have to work on internally in our community. That conference, the Black Men Healing Conference, is June 25th and 26th, 2015. It will be at Metro State University in Paul, Minnesota, again, June 25th and 26th. For information on the conference and to register, please go to brothershealing.com. I want to thank you for joining me tonight.
Sitting out on the edge of paradise, every inch on your skin
This is Verona Mitchell, and thank you for joining me on Cultural Conversations. At Cultural Conversations, we're bringing weekly cultural issues and topics to our online studio. Join me next week as we bring more of Cultural Conversations. Thank you for joining me. See you next week. Thank you.